What's up, everybody? We have Eric Cassano here today. I'm super excited to talk to him, and we're going to get to him in a little bit, but I'm going to get right into a story before we dive deep with Eric. This goes back, I believe, about 5 years ago. I'm pretty much roaming around the earth. I don't have like a stationary home, so I was 3 weeks staying in a tent on the Big Island of Hawaii, and I get a text from Eric, and he says, hey, I'm doing a breathwork rebirthing week-long workshop in Malibu at my house. Do you want to come? And for some reason, I thought he said Maui instead of Malibu. And I was like, sure. So I bought a trip to Maui. I bought a flight to Maui. And then the day before I'm about to go, I think I texted you, Eric, and you're like, no, I'm in Malibu, not Maui. Because I was like, hey, where in Maui are you? And so I was like, oh, do I really want to go to this? Do I divert my Hawaii roamings for this? Long story short, I ended up going. I made it to Malibu. And for a week long, we were doing rebirthing exercises, which I'm sure we will talk more about. But this is where that picture of me buried up to my neck in dirt comes from. I was in there for 75 minutes doing crazy breath work. But that wasn't the most interesting part of the weekend for me. Was when I was in his tub, water up to my neck, doing rebirthing exercises, and I went back into the womb. And it was just flashbacks of mother and flashbacks of my now, not flashbacks, but really felt the connection to my now wife, Carolina. And this is actually the moment where I was like, okay, this is where I could feel the fusing of our energy in that bathtub. And I think it was like 2 days later, I went and confessed my love and my desire to be together, harmonious forever with her. And that was majorly contributed by the experience that Eric facilitated during that week. So Eric, just wanted to share that story for everyone, just so everyone knows a little bit about our history and the impact that you have on people with your breath work at Aquarium Alchemy. Welcome.
Thank you, Rod. It's good to be here. It's good to talk to you, soul brother.
I know. So Aquarium Alchemy, can you tell us a little bit about what you do with people at your retreats, or do you do online services? What's going on with Aquarium Alchemy?
Yeah, so Aquarium Alchemy is my wellness brand that I created. It's a plethora of different natural healing techniques. So while I teach five elements of breathwork, which is rebirthing in different environments, I also have an online course called Breathwork and Lucid Dreaming 101. It's basically yoga from a very Western perspective. A lot of info out there on breathwork, a lot of info out there on lucid dreaming, but I'm one of the first people to bring breathwork and lucid dreaming together in a really harmonious way where I articulate it in the best way I can. So I have a healing center here in Malibu where I teach this rebirthing, which is initially doing an hour and a half of conscious connected breathing, just deep breathing for an hour and a half. But as you know, whole thing goes into that. It sounds easy, but it's just deep breathing.
When you say the word just, it sounds simple and easy.
It's a whole thing, breathing deep for an hour and a half. The human gut body goes through a very specific process when one, and I'm generalizing because everybody, every human goes through really a really specific type of healing experience when they breathe as deep as they can for an hour and a half. And as you know, if you breathe over an hour, in the dirt up to your neck, it's totally different than if you breathe deep for an hour in a warm bathtub. And initially, rebirthing breathwork is called rebirthing because of Leonard Orr's experiences breathing deep in the warm tub. He started having, these flashbacks of being back in the womb space when he started breathing in a warm bathtub. And Leonard Orr is the guy who coined the term rebirthing breathwork back in the 60s. So we can talk more about him later. And yeah, and I'm so grateful for him. Leonard Orr wrote a bunch of books about physical immortality. Ironically, he passed away a few years ago, but his widowed wife, who is still carries on his legacy, she's explained why he passed away on a bunch of YouTube videos, and she really breaks it down in a really beautiful, profound way, why he died. But Leonard Orr was really humble in his books, and he even said, if I don't get this right, I could die too. So he wasn't going around saying, I'm definitely going to be 1,000 years old. But I also have my beliefs why I think he passed away, and maybe some of the healing techniques he was missing. So yes.
What would you say is one of his main staples for immortality?
His whole thing is bathing twice a day and sleeping next to a fire, or working with the fire quite often, and getting the diet right, not overeating. I know eating meat is quite controversial. I see both sides. I get veganism. I get eating meat. I support both. But what I personally believe, if you subscribe to the ascended master philosophies, that if you subscribe that, if you subscribe to the idea that a human being can turn into a body of light, I don't think they can do that eating meat. It doesn't make sense. If you want to ascend, I think you have to just eat plants. But that's highly controversial. Not everybody believes that human beings are capable of doing something like that. And not everybody wants to be immortal. You know, some people want to die before 100. I 100% respect that. But I believe we have more options. We don't have to just die or ascend. We can die consciously. And what that means is that we can literally pick where we want to go next lifetime if you can have your mind focused as you pass away. And every night when you go to sleep, that's like training for death. So if you can fall asleep consciously, then you can die consciously. If you can pick where you want to, if you can choose what dream you want to have, then you can, in theory, choose where you're going to go next lifetime.
Uh-huh. Let's get into lucid dreaming. There's a lot of questions I liked and I wanted to go to with immortality, but since you brought up dreaming and essentially being conscious while you're dreaming, because a lot of us are familiar with that term being awake or waking up.
Right.
And we're usually talking about waking life, waking up within waking life.
Mm-hmm.
And so is there practice? Can you speak a little bit about the practice of waking up or being conscious while you are, quote, falling asleep?
Yeah. Aren't those just such cool words, cool terms? Waking up while sleeping. I mean, what a paradox. So initially, lucid dreaming is a side effect of proper meditation. And I think the word meditation is so misused in the English language. I think meditation has taken on a life of its own here in the West. Now, if you Google the word meditation, you're going to see the Western perspective. If you Google meditation from an Eastern perspective, you're going to get a completely different definition. So from a Western perspective, the word meditation, basically meaningless. If you look up the word meditation on Google, you're going to see words like pondering, thinking, channeling, dreaming, all these words, contemplating, thinking, channeling. None of those words actually means meditation. So from the Eastern perspective, or from the Hindu perspective, Indian perspective, meditation technically means letting go. And what that also means is that we can focus on one thing without letting our mind wander. And that can take decades or lifetimes to achieve. Because if I try to think of a lotus flower with my imagination, how long can I think of that lotus flower till a new thought comes in? 5, 10 seconds, maybe. And so breath work is actually a precursor to proper meditation, according to the 8 limbs of yoga, which we can talk about later. But normally when people start lucid dreaming, depending on where your consciousness is, and depending on your birth trauma, and depending on a on how sharp your mind is. Usually people start waking up while they're sleeping in the middle of a dream. And that happens from, like I said, working on concentration and being able to relax. Those are the two components that's going to allow someone to be lucid in their sleep: relaxation and concentration. Now, I've had a few experiences falling asleep and going right into a lucid dream. Usually they were caused by things like sleep deprivation, maybe a little plant medicine induced. But really for me, it's been sleep deprivation that's allowed me to go right into a lucid dream. So there's a few different types of lucid dreams. Let's talk about a couple of these kinds. The most common type of lucid dream that everybody knows about is the dream-induced lucid dream. That's having a lucid dream at night while you're sleeping during your eight-hour block in the nighttime usually. And then you have the wake-induced lucid dream. Now, that's having a lucid dream while you're awake. Usually you can be sitting up. You're kind of like half in, half out. This is what a lot of psychics and mystics do. They're able to have dreams on command. They can just close their eyes and go right into a full-blown dream. And whatever they're thinking about, or I could say this with anyone, whatever we're thinking about right before the moment we have the dream, that's what we dream about. So if I'm able to have lucid dreams and let's say, for example, I think of the house next door and I'm visualizing the house next door and I fall into a dream while visualizing the house, I can potentially see what's in the house. I can astral project into the house, or at worst case scenario, get a version of what's going on in the house. So that's a wake-induced lucid dream. And then you also have a term that I coined that nobody else has coined. I call it a breath-induced lucid dream. And that's initially after doing an hour and a half of deep breathing. And then if you relax your breath, you can go into a full-blown vision or dream. But they're very unique. They're different than wake-induced lucid dream. It's different than dream-induced lucid dream. It's a breath-induced lucid dream. And then you have like what I'm going to call plant medicine-induced lucid dreams. That's taking your ayahuasca or whatever. And as you close your eyes and relax, you can have these plant medicine-induced types of lucid dreams that tend to be more colorful and playful because it has the plant DMT, not the human DMT. And I believe human DMT is of higher vibration than plant DMT, because the human kingdom and the animal kingdom are two different kingdoms. So while it's the same molecule, they come from different sources, but they can work together. And that's why we all know plant medicines can be quite healing. But as my teacher always said, no one's ever become enlightened taking plant medicines.
Yes.
Right. Yes, that's my experience as well. So you mentioned astral projection. Is there a difference between astral projection and lucid dreaming?
That's a great question. And so many people have been asking me that lately. And what I always tell people, it depends what you mean by astral projection. So a lot of times when people say astral projection, they're talking about remote viewing. Now, remote viewing is basically witnessing real-time 3D reality in your mind or in your dream. You're looking at what's going on next door or in another country as it's happening in real time. So that's a form of astral projection. And to answer your question, yes, I think lucid dreaming is a form of astral projection because you are projecting your astral body into different realities. And that's what dreams are. They're just different realities. But, you know, how good are you at shifting realities? I'm actually, compared to the great yogis, I'm a beginner. So when I'm having lucid dreams, I still haven't mastered teleporting in my lucid dreams. Flying in lucid dreams is beginner stuff. So a lot of people say, hey, when I'm lucid dreaming, I'm flying. I'm like, well, that's fantastic. Me too. But, you know, that's low level stuff. And I mean, I've had times where my consciousness was so weak, I couldn't even fly during a lucid experience. I'm like, wow, I haven't been meditating. I have a hard time flying. And that was years ago. So normally when I'm lucid dreaming now, I'm at least able to fly. But you can start, it's not to be cheesy, but it's kind of like being a superhero and learning your powers for the first time when you're lucid dreaming. Like, okay, I can fly now. Now what? I can't teleport. Can I make energy balls? And doing all these tricks, it's also called dream yoga. you're like, you're working on your concentration, you're working on your psychic abilities, you're working on how powerful your mind is while you're lucid. And something that's really advanced is meditating, calming the mind and focusing the mind while you're lucid dreaming. Usually that will wake people up, because the best thing you can do at the beginning of your lucid dreaming journeys is to engage in the dream. Oh, I'm going to go over here, I'm going to go over there, and keep your mind moving. If you slow the mind down, most likely people will wake up. But if you can slow the mind down while you're lucid dreaming and you're able to stay asleep, that's very powerful. That's next level. I call that monk stuff, you know. And you can read all about these type of things I'm talking about in books on dream yoga. Tibetan dream yoga is initially just doing different tasks while you're lucid in your dreams. So becoming lucid is just the beginning of the journey. And once you're lucid all the time, then you can do tasks like, oh, I'm gonna fly. I'm going to go to Venus and hang out with the Hathors. I'm going to resurrect my dead grandmother and have a chat with her. You know, I'm going to create a building with my mind. You know, these are all dream yoga tasks, and meditating would be one of them as well. But again, slowing the mind down, very advanced stuff.
So just to go back to the last question I asked, astral projection is usually thought of within this current reality. And what I heard you insinuate is that you could also lucid dream or astral project into other realities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so how does that work? Like, mm-hmm. Is another reality?
Well, the way I look at it is that any thought you have can become a dream. So there are infinite realities within the finite. But even with these infinite realities, we're still seeing particular shapes and geometrical patterns. The human body, the humanoid body, is a particular geometrical pattern. So that's what makes these infinite dreams finite. It's finite within the infinite. Astral projection is not necessarily just remote viewing. Remote viewing, viewing our current reality. A lot of times when people astral project, they kind of get I hear stories of people getting a blend of this reality with the dream reality. Like they'll fly in their neighborhood or something like that, and they'll see angels. So it's like they're astral projecting, but they're also seeing energy within their 3D reality that they're now witnessing it in a 4D way, hence the astral projection.
Okay, got that. Speaking of angels, and you're talking about the book or books on dream yoga, are there, and you're like a human representation of a guide that people can seek advice from, are there guides or beings within these other realms that communication can be had with?
Yeah, there seems to be different realms where different beings live, from my perspective. And something that I do is I teach people to channel deities at festivals and workshops. I was at Conscious Life Expo last year. I did a workshop on breathwork and lucid dreaming. And a being or a guide that I use often, and I teach people to communicate with this being, is Green Tara. Have you heard of Green Tara?
No.
So she's the goddess of compassion. She's a female Buddha, and she turns out she's the earth element. She is the earth. She is Mother Gaia in humanoid form. You may have seen Green Tara in like art. Like if you're ever at any festivals and you go into a gallery with a bunch of deities, you know, you see your Lakshmi, you got your Shiva. A lot of times you'll see Green Tara. I think they had a Green Tara art on the Bhakti stage this year. So, I mean, you may have seen, if you've seen any green Dakini, she's a Dakini, which technically means sky dweller, but Dakinis are these like women who move energy. And And green Tara is my favorite tahini. So this is going to get interesting. So for a while, I didn't think that I could channel because I can't go into a full blown wake induced lucid dream like a few of my ex-partners can do and different mystics and psychics that I've worked with. So what I've learned is that I don't have to go into a full blown lucid dream to channel incredible information. What I realized, and now I've realized it so much that I teach other people to do it and they have great success with it, I've realized that our visual mind is kind of like the dream reality, and we're always dreaming. So anytime you're using your imagination, you're kind of having a dream right there and then, even if you're not fully falling asleep. If you're falling asleep, you're like really experiencing it. If you have your eyes closed and you're using your imagination, it's kind of like in your third eye, so to speak. Now, some people are really visual. In other words, their third eye is super open. But what I just from a grounded perspective, they're just more visual than I am. Now, I've worked with people who are less visual than I am, and I work with people who are more visual than I am. I actually train psychics now, which is really exciting. Working with people who have who have a greater visual mind than me. In other words, they see more detail than I do. I have so much fun working with these people because it's like they have the visual mind, but they don't know how powerful it is. So what I explained to people at my workshops is that there's something called active visualization and something called passive visualization. Active visualization is when you choose what you want to see with your imagination. So I can see whatever I want. I'm the god of my own reality, especially in my third eye. So passive visualization is when you let that visualization just play out. So what I tend to do, and the way this works, you can really make up your own visualization. You can make up whatever you want with your vision and with intention. It's both. So what I like to do, my go-to visualization that I teach people is I bring people to this cave, a cave where Green Tara dwells. And she doesn't just dwell in that cave. She is all over the place. But I like to go to this cave. So I have people visualize this cave. And then a lot of times I don't even tell people what Green Tara looks like. I say, you're going to meet this green woman and you're going to ask her a question, what you need for your happiness. So people say, okay. And I say, let's just take 3 minutes to visualize this. So we'll sit in a meditation circle. We'll all close our eyes. People will visualize this cave. They'll meet this green woman. They'll actively see all this. And then they'll ask her a question and they'll passively let their visualization play out. And Green Tara will answer their question. So when we all open our eyes, I like to show people a picture of Green Tara on my phone. Oh, did she look like that? And 5 times out of 10, half of the time, when people are really visual, they say, oh my God, that's the woman I saw. And they never seen her before. So I'm simply showing people how psychic they are through a very simple visual exercise. And I mean, I call it a visual exercise to keep it cash, but we're channeling, you know?
Right. I like how you brought up imagination, because it's essentially, if you break that word down, image, nation.
Mm.
Nation refers to the terms to be born, like the origin of birth.
Wow.
And so you're essentially birthing or creating images. You're creating realities, and that's what your imagination is.
That's incredible.
Everything on this physical realm starts within imagination. Like, that's the nation of all of creation here and now. Okay, so let's get a little tangible. What can people do? You mentioned meditating, but could you give a little freebie guidance on what somebody can do? Are there, is there herbs? Is there a certain type of breath work? Is there a time of sleep? Like, do you do it when you start sleeping, in the middle of sleep, when you wake up in the morning?
Yeah.
Some tangible things to get started on the lucid dreaming game.
Yeah. So it's so important to have a good morning practice and have a good nighttime practice. And, what does that look like? We can do so many different things, but I'll just give some, like you said, some simple sort of guidelines or techniques that we can do. So Let's start with the nighttime practice. It's so important to work on concentration right before we go to bed. And there's a plethora of things you can do, but I'm just gonna keep it simple for now. One thing we can engage in, one thing that's made me go lucid at night, is simply doing some mantras right before we go to bed. So don't do it laying down, because you might pass out. So let's say you get in bed and then you sit up, set a timer on your phone for 30 minutes and repeat literally any mantra. You could just say, it could be English. You could just say, I am lucid, in your head for 30 minutes. I am lucid, I am lucid, I am lucid. And just keep repeating that. And once the 30 minutes are up, then go to sleep. Because you worked on concentration right before you went to bed, that's gonna trickle over at night and initially make you lucid. Well, that's all good. We also want to program our subconscious mind and prepare ourselves for going lucid, so it's like a normal thing. So I can't stress this enough, but it's so important to have a dream journal and a day journal. So before you go to bed, you can also write your day down. Now, it took me a while to realize how important it is having a day journal, because I thought it was cheesy. Dear journal, today I ate a cheese sandwich. But no, it's important, because first of all, we're working on our memory and concentration, which is key to lucid dreaming, because lucid dreaming is about memory, concentration, relaxation. But when you're writing your day down before you go to bed, you're actually processing your day. So you don't have to process it at night while you're sleeping. You get it all out of the way and it opens up your reality for new things. So before you go to bed, write down that day journal, work on some concentration. And if you want, you can throw a little breath work in there. Maybe 10 minutes of deep breathing, throw that in there. So 10 minutes of deep breathing, write down your day, do 30 minutes of a mantra, go to sleep. Now that's a decent nighttime practice. Especially you do it all the time, you're gonna see results pretty quick. Now it is just as important to have a good morning practice. And this is really fun. This is morning practices are amazing. And I mean, as you know, because you and I were both sadhana advocates at some point in our lives, right?
Right.
I mean, and I'm sure you saw how powerful it is doing any kind of meditation at 4 a.m., right? And that's what got me lucid, was starting to meditate at 4 a.m. And I was like, oh, is that how I become lucid? I meditate at 4 a.m. for a couple hours. And so here's another way to go lucid. And it's really great to, I noticed that it's really good to, I'm not going to call it meditation. I'm going to call it working on concentration with our eyes closed. It sounds a little longer, but I'm going to use that term. So if you work on concentration with your eyes closed at 4 a.m., it's completely different than doing it at noon. I would say, doing our meditation practice, whatever you want to call it, doing it at noon doesn't really have the same juice as doing our meditation practice at 4 a.m. You start working on your concentration at 4 a.m. and magic is going to happen. Because when we're tired, when we're sleepy, and before the sun comes up, because as you know, in the 2 hours before the sun rises is a great time to manifest or think. But also when we're sleepy, our subconscious mind is super impressionable. It's the best time to program our subconscious mind early in the morning at 4 a.m. or right before bed. So I've noticed that's really magic. So for example, we can wake up at, midnight. Let's say we go to bed at midnight and then we wake up at 4 a.m. That's not a lot of sleep. That's 4 hours of sleep. So we have 4 hours. We wake up at 4 a.m. We do a little bit of breath work. We do a little bit of concentration with our eyes closed, let's say for 2 hours, and then we go back to sleep. Now, when you go back to sleep, because you just worked on concentration for 2 hours, you're very likely to go lucid. And if you don't go to lucid, if you don't go lucid, you're going to have very expansive, detailed dreams. And so Stephen LaBerge called this, uh, the he referred to it sometimes as the 2-2-2 method. It means waking up 2 hours early, doing 2 hours of meditation, and then taking a 2 hour nap. 2-2-2 method. And that's also a great way for going lucid. Now, you will probably go lucid during your nap, but it's also going to make you lucid during the nighttime as well. Because when you just concentrate all day, every day, concentrate in the morning, it's just going to bleed all over your life. You're going to become more awake. So the more conscious you are, the more awake you are in your waking life, the more awake you are in your dream life. Your dream life is simply a reflection of your waking life, and your waking life is simply a reflection of your dream life. They go hand in hand. So another very popular thing to do to go lucid is to do a reality check all day. So all day, every day, throughout the day, ask yourself the magical question, am I dreaming? And if you ask yourself this question all the time, eventually you'll ask yourself that while you're sleeping. People will be completely unconscious in their dreams, and they're just so used to asking themselves, da-da-da-da, am I dreaming? And then they'll, at that moment, become lucid. Oh my God, I am. And then it all begins. So yeah, reality checks, super important. Whatever you ask yourself all day, every day, that's what you're programming your subconscious mind with. And so those are some of the keys, you know, meditation, dream journal, and reality checks.
And polyphasic sleep, the 2-2-2 method.
Rock and roll. I've never heard that term. Can you elaborate on it?
Polyphasic sleep. It essentially means multiple phases of sleep. And you were talking about meditating in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. I feel it has something to do with the sun, but also you're completely grounded within this reality, this physical reality, and awoken and aware, and your brainwave frequencies are vibrating awake. And so if you're just sleeping all night and then you're awake all day, there's a big, huge separation between dreaming and being awake. Mm-hmm. But if you are waking up and sleeping and waking up and sleeping multiple times during the same 24-hour window, polyphasic phases, then the difference between dreaming and awakeness is less. And so I just, the 2-2-2 method sounds to me like polyphasic sleep, because
100%
sleeping in multiple phases.
Yeah.
So there, somebody asked, can dreams become a reality?
Yes. Absolutely.
John asked that. And if anyone's listening to this and you want to watch these shows live, join the Self-Expansionist community. It's a free community where we can preview this show live, and you can be part of it. Ask questions, and you can shape the direction of what we do with our guests here.
Cool. Yeah, awesome. I think that's a great question, but it depends. So it depends how out there your dreams are. If you're having dreams of being alive in the 1800s, it might be hard to manifest that one, unless you become friends with Doc Brown and Marty. But realistically, if you're dreaming of something that you want to manifest realistically, absolutely can it become part of your reality. In fact, I think if you want to manifest, you know, I like to use the example, $1 million in a red car, then dream of that $1 million in that red car and how you're going to get it, and keep dreaming of that. And your dreams will, first of all, give you the answers of how to achieve that goal. And second of all, the more you dream of it, the more you're going to go towards that reality. So to answer the question, absolutely, absolutely. And use dreams to manifest your desires.
I want to point out and highlight that Eric just rephrased the term meditation. And I would assume what we're talking about with dreaming, he rephrased it to working on your concentration. And that's very, three-dimensional terminology.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
That we all understand and comprehend, but that's essentially what even dreaming develops into, is your ability to concentrate while dreaming, and you can shape your dreams. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that say, I can't meditate. And essentially what they're saying is I can't concentrate. They don't have the skill set yet.
I can't meditate either. I'm just working towards it.
Good. Yeah, it's a practice, right? But my question was going to be, for somebody who comes to you and they're in that state of awareness of, I can't do it, I've never been able to do it, what comes out of your mouth to guide them after that phrase is said to you?
I love it. I say, let's breathe, baby. Because breath work is a precursor to meditation. So something that makes all the sense in the world is a little something called the eight limbs of yoga. And you can look at these as eight steps of yoga. They're not steps, but you can look at them like steps. And it helps us make logical sense of enlightenment and meditation. So let's go over these really quick. And I talk about this all the time. And I'm so lucky that I had great teachers who studied the Vedic texts who have explained this stuff to me. And now I'm relaying it to you guys. So I just want to say how grateful I am to be able to share this stuff, because I'm no genius. I'm just a regular dude. And that's what makes me actually really powerful, is that I know we're all just regular dudes and dudettes, but we're all geniuses as well. So it's amazing. But anyway, okay, eight limbs of yoga. The eighth limb of yoga is samadhi. So there are different levels of samadhi. Samadhi is enlightenment. Samadhi is liberation. And I don't know, and the samadhi is just one level of enlightenment. You can go beyond and beyond and beyond. But here in our sort of grounded world, let's just start with regular samadhi. So eighth limb of yoga is samadhi. The seventh limb of yoga, that's meditation. And again, that's defined as letting go. Meditation, dhyana, means letting go. And again, I think that means letting go into concentration. But now let's start at the first limb of yoga, because you have these six limbs of yoga that prepares the body for what I call meditation proper. And again, meditation is concentrating on one thing without letting your mind wander. You're letting go into that one thing, and nothing is one thing. So a lot of people, a lot of times people think next level meditation is emptying your mind and thinking of nothing. Well, thinking of nothing is thinking of one thing, because nothing is a thing, one thing. So we have six limbs of yoga to prepare the body for meditation. These are highly logical, by the way. This is nothing woo-woo. This is part of our reality, as far as I'm concerned. First limb of yoga, be good to yourself. Basic stuff. Say nice things to yourself. Eat good food. Be good to yourself. Second limb of yoga, be good to other people. Once again, super basic. Karma's only a bitch when you are. You're nice to other people, reality's going to be nice back at you. You know, and think nice thoughts about people. You can't, if you're thinking mean thoughts about people, you're not living up to the second limb of yoga. So be good to other people with your actions and thoughts. Third limb of yoga, that's what we're sold here in the West as yoga. That's exercise, asanas. That's only an eighth of yoga. You know, we got to stretch. But here in the West, when people say, I'm going to do yoga, you could just tell them, you're going to go do an eighth of yoga. You're going to go do stretching. You know, okay. You know, riding a bicycle, also yoga, you know, lifting weights, also yoga. So that's the third limb of yoga. The fourth limb of yoga, that's pranayama, that's breath work. I teach rebirthing breath work, which is the most intense form of pranayama for sure. In fact, some people, my teacher, who was a monk for 7 years, Indian guy, Mahesh, great friend, great guy, he said rebirthing breathwork is something greater than pranayama. He said it's super intense. It's beyond pranayama. But regardless, we can just put it in the pranayama category. The fifth limb of yoga, that is withdrawal of the senses. Initially, that is going internal. That's your dreaming. That's closing your eyes. That's witnessing your own inner reality. Once you awaken kundalini through breathwork, you're going to be forced to go internal. You're going to be forced to withdraw the senses. So withdraw the senses also means like no music, no incense, no not eating. You're letting go of your regular five senses to go internal and experience your sixth sense. And within the sixth sense, you have the psychic version of the other senses. That's why when you're dreaming, you can taste food, you can feel drugs, you can see and hear. You literally have all the senses being filtered into the sixth sense. The sixth limb of yoga, that's concentration. So when we're going internal, fifth limb of yoga, and working on concentration, we're doing limbs five and six. We're not technically meditating. We are preparing the body for meditation proper, which again can take decades or lifetimes. Or if you're born really enlightened, if you have a really good birth and a really good upbringing, maybe this stuff is second nature for you. Personally, I'm a C-section baby. I had a few birth traumas that I've worked through with the breath work and potentially still working through it. I was born with flat feet. One of my balls didn't drop. I had C-section babies, have a hard time letting go of things. And through all my practices, my feet are getting flatter. I'm building an arch in my feet. My balls work great, or ball. I've worked through my things. You know, I even had cancer 10 years ago that I've worked through. But I'm so grateful for these birth traumas because they propelled me to really do some internal work and really understand enlightenment. And if I would have had a good birth, I don't know if I would be on this path, you know, hard to say. So we have to be grateful for everything in life and we have to love everything in life. All the traumas can bring us to really beautiful places when we get to authentically heal from them. So anyway, sorry, I digress. let's go over these limbs one more time. Limb one, be good to yourself. Limb two, be good to other people. Limb three, exercise. Limb four, breathe. Limb five, withdraw the senses. Limb six, concentration. Once you do all those, potentially one day you can meditate. Limb seven. And if you can fully meditate, that means you can concentrate in the moment fully. Then potentially you can reach samadhi, which is the eighth limb of yoga. So meditation is a precursor to enlightenment.
There's a bunch of questions.
Cool.
Is samadhi a place that you feel somebody can be at permanently?
I would assume so. I heard of a guy, I guess he lives in Santa Barbara. I think he's like an Indian tech guy. I never met him. Maybe you've heard of him. I think his name is Swami V. I got some friends who meditate with him and supposedly he's a good dude. Apparently this guy goes to samadhi every night when he sleeps. And he could potentially be an enlightened dude. I would love to meet him. My friends have offered me to go meet him and go meditate with him and experience him for myself. Now, it's a fun game being in this reality because when you go out in the world and you communicate with other people and you eat with other people and you talk to other people, you're absorbing their energy. You're taking on their emotional energetic pollution. Now, so what it seems like to me is like people, if Swami V is in fact going to samadhi every night when he dreams, then maybe he's not in samadhi when he's communicating with other people because he's got to deal with other people's energies. And in theory, people like Babaji, Babaji is a 9,000-year-old yogi, if you subscribe to that. And Babaji would go hang out with the people. He would go teach. He would go be part of the community. But other people's energies would age him, and he would become old. So in order to rejuvenate his body, legend has it that Babaji would have to get away from society and go into a cave by himself for 50 years and probably not eat. And the key is not being around people. While people help us survive, they also kill us. And Babaji would rejuvenate his body and then he'd come out and hang out with the townsmen, with the community. So was Babaji in samadhi when he hung out with the community? I don't know. Potentially a high level yogi like that, who was God in the flesh, maybe he was in samadhi. But people like Swami V seems like maybe he would come in and out of samadhi. And I'm just taking an educated guess here, because that's a really good question. And, you know, one day when I reach samadhi, we'll get back on the podcast and we'll talk about it.
You mentioned birth trauma. How do you know if you have birth trauma?
Well, I would say most of us probably have it if we're born in a hospital. The main aspect of the birth trauma is that we had the umbilical cord cut a little early. So Western hospitals, when it comes to birthing, excuse my French, it's a shit show. It makes no sense. No disrespect to all the doctors out there who are doing their best. But if you come out of your mom's womb and the umbilical cord is still pumping blood, and you cut the umbilical cord while still pumping blood, that in itself is, in fact, a birth trauma. So a better way to do it is to wait about 30 minutes for the umbilical cord to stop pumping blood, and then you can cut it. I have a friend who has two daughters, and one daughter had a horrible birth, and the other daughter had a great birth where they waited to cut the birth trauma. And these two people don't even look related. The one daughter who has the birth trauma has like epilepsy and issues and just, you know, deep issues. The other daughter who had the nice birth, the home birth, a good home birth, had the umbilical cord cut, you know, 15 minutes at least. She's like a shaman. she's like a next level 20-year-old, just smart, borderline enlightened being. And they have, I believe they even have the same dad, and it couldn't be more different because of the way they were birthed. Now I have some family who had one of my cousins had a home birth, but the home birth didn't go so good. And so she has it rougher. And she developed some issues because her home birth was really bad. But so, you know, I get both. Like it's tricky. You really have to prepare. If you're going to do a home birth, you really got to prepare your body. And doing breath work before getting pregnant, that's the key. Doing Kegels, you know, your Mula Bandh, having a really strong pelvic floor for men and women is very important. And working through our traumas before you even get pregnant and learning to breathe before you get pregnant, that's going to make the birth super easy. So for all the people who don't learn breath work and have babies at home, hey, if they have a good birth, awesome, you know, awesome. But just, you know, again, I can't stress this enough. Breath work is the key for moving through trauma. Breath work burns through our karma. Breath work gets rid of our neuroses because we all suffer from it. Breath work can have us avoid senility when we get older. It clears the mind. It just makes everything a little bit easier. Activates Kundalini and prepares the body for a good birth. So this is really cool. And I don't know, Ra, if you've looked this up before. Did you know you can have a dolphin for a midwife?
Yeah. Well, if you can find a, yeah, they're pretty much making that illegal now and trying to shut those facilities down.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, dolphins are, they've got that sensation to communicate.
The sonar.
Yeah, they can see within the human body and actually see what's going on.
Yeah.
But
totally.
There was a facility in Hawaii, I believe, but I think it got shut down. It's like the whole raw milk thing growing. I think it's going to be illegal to grow food in your garden soon. And so it's kind of in line with that, where they're trying to shut those facilities down and not allow anybody to do it.
It's like someone doesn't want us being superhuman.
Right.
I don't know.
That is what happens. There are studies where they followed the dolphin induced births, and the people score higher on many different aspects of life.
They're taller, they're smarter, they're more psychic, they're just incredible people. Can you imagine? There's a great, if anybody wants to look this up, just get on YouTube, type dolphin midwife, and it's quite a sight. It's right there on YouTube, and the video has not been taken down yet. So, water births, dolphin births. If one has a smooth birth and they wait to cut the umbilical cord, those kids grow up to be amazing. But me being a C-section baby is a horrible birth trauma. And then, of course, having the umbilical cord got horrible. But something, and what's really interesting, and something I've been learning, is that each birth trauma creates particular defects within the human consciousness. So, for example, not only am I a C-section baby, but I'm also a late baby. I didn't want to come out of the womb. It was so cozy in there. I don't want to leave. And so that's another reason I'm a C-section baby. So late babies, for example, have a hard time waking up in the morning. My whole life, I loved sleeping in because the bed is like the womb. And like I said, going to sleep every night is like practicing death, and waking up in the morning is like being born every day. I mean, how cool. So truly, we can work through anything. You know, I don't want to blame my mom or my dad, or, you know, they're great. They did the best they could. But my whole life, I had a hard time waking up in the morning. And those times I do wake up early in the morning, as difficult as it is, boy, is it rewarding. Meditating in the morning is so rewarding. It really gets the happy chemicals going. But it's been a challenge for me waking up in the morning. Talk to anyone who had a really smooth birth, born on time, easy peasy, came right out the womb. They love waking up in the morning, and they're early birds, and they just naturally got it. You know, for me, I love this yoga discipline stuff because I was born lacking discipline. So I really needed it throughout my life. And slowly I've been figuring it out, how to be happier and be more in tune.
That's an interesting correlation there. I feel like we're moving into breathwork, but before we finish off with lucid dreaming, what's the most transformational experience that either you have or one of your clients have had regarding lucid dreaming?
Well, I have this story that I always tell that happened to me about 8 years ago. It was the first time I had a synchronized lucid dream, because I've seen this stuff on movies, I've read about it, but to experience a synchronized lucid dreaming with another being, it confirms a lot of things for me. Like, oh, this stuff is real. So I'll tell you, I'll keep the story pretty short. This was about 8 years ago, and I was with my late wife, Cassie, who she's amazing. She passed away of cancer 6 years ago. And that's a whole nother story. And Cassie is actually the one who brought breathwork into my reality. And she gave me so much. She helped me become the person I am today. So about 8 years ago, Cassie and I are on a flight to Costa Rica. And Cassie was a psychic. She was super intuitive. She could have wake-induced lucid dreams. And her and I had a lot of fun playing in the ethers. But I, at that point, I couldn't have wake-induced lucid dreams. I didn't even know how powerful my psychic mind was at that point. I was more giving up my power at that point. But regardless, I was still exploring psychicism, and I knew a lot of things at that point. So anyway, Cassie and I are on this flight to Costa Rica. I had only gotten 2 hours of sleep, and I ate a little bit of a weed edible. Now, I'm going to call that a cheat code, because... So that's two things. That's plant medicine mixed with sleep deprivation. So while I was on this combo of plant medicine and sleep deprivation, I was on the flight and I noticed that the moment I closed my eyes, I would go right into a dream. And I was like, oh my God. And at that point, I had read enough books on lucid dreaming. I knew how it worked. I couldn't do those type of things. I understood how psychicism worked, but I just didn't believe I could do it. So anyway, I'm on the plane, I'm on my weed edible, 2 hours of sleep, I close my eyes, I go right into a dream, and then I open my eyes, I say, oh my God, I can go right into a dream. What should I do? Let's play with the waters here. Let's try it out. Let's try some things out. So I looked around the plane and I said, what are we gonna do? And I looked at Cassie, my wife at the time, and I said, hey, Cassie, close your eyes. Let's try something cool. And she said, what are you talking about? What do you mean? I said, just trust me. Just close your eyes. Let's try something out. And she said, okay. So she closes her eyes. Let me close my eyes. And what I do is I visualize myself going into her brain. I astral projected into her mind. And so that took about 1 second. And I saw my astral body on the plane. I saw like the whole plane, and I saw myself go right into her brain. And then poof, I woke up in a white room, like the Matrix, you know, when Keanu Reeves is in that white room. Oh, I was there. And I was like, oh my, whoa. And I looked around, everything was just white. I was looking at my hands, I'm like, this is cool. And then Cassie runs up to me with a little schoolgirl outfit on, and she says, oh my God, you're here, welcome, welcome. I've been waiting so long for you to visit me. And she takes my hand and we start walking down this white room, and I'm just like blown away. I'm like, wow, this is cool. And she said, isn't this great? And she kept saying, oh, I've been waiting so long for you to come visit me. This is so cool. And I'm like, yeah. And we just kind of go on like a 1 minute walk. and then I wake up on the plane, and I knew what happened, but I had to hear it from her mouth. And Cassie looks at me and she goes, oh, that was so nice. And I said, what was nice? She's like, well, we met my inner self. I said, what color was the room? She said, it was a white room. Like, what were you wearing? She's like, a little schoolgirl outfit. And then she explained the dream to me perfectly. She said, yeah, I ran up to you and I said, you're here and I've been waiting for you. And I realized at that moment, we just had the same dream at the same time. I was like, so that was like, that was an initiation. That was a very initiatory. That was my first time that I realized, like, this stuff is real. I'm on the right path. What else is the human mind, is the human consciousness capable of? Because I'm just scraping the surface. I mean, that's nothing compared to what we can actually do. But it was a cute experience. And I've taken it so much further since then. But synchronized dream, baby. You know, yeah. Cool.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Simon or Simone, I think it's Simon, said he had an astral flight after the first time he did Tummo breath before going to bed.
Nice.
I also astral projected on a plane once as well. So maybe there's something about being away from the ground that also enhances the ability to go through the portal.
I would say so.
The funny thing is, I started my, let's call it meditation practice. The first practices I was ever doing over 20 years ago was popping up into people's dreams. And I tend not to talk about it much because there's a line that's easy to cross when you're doing that. And one must be prepared if they're doing that to maintain integrity of the other while they're doing that. But yeah, there's so much. And that was my question. I was like, okay, reality isn't what I was taught it was. There's something else going on. You mentioned rebirthing breathwork. Is that your primary practice? You teach other types of breathwork?
Yeah, I do various forms of pranayama. I love Tummo breathing, you know, the Wim Hof breathing, super great. I also teach something called Bastrika pranayama that I have a bunch of free Bastrika stuff on my Instagram and YouTube. And initially that's just, it's similar to Wim Hof breathing, but it's a little quicker. It's not breath of fire. Breath of fire is more active exhale, passive inhale with the same amount of breath. This is more on the top of the lungs. So it's like 10 deep breaths. And then on the 11th breath, take a deep breath and hold it for as long as you can. So, you know, Wim Hof breathing is slower, conscious, connected breathing, exhale, hold, inhale, hold. This is just deep breathing, inhale, hold. Bastrika is super potent, super profound and powerful. Also Hatha pranayama, which is deep breathing through one nostril at a time, not Nadi Shumna, which is slow, nasal changing, but Hatha pranayama, the way I was taught in the Himalayas, is you just cover one nostril and just breathe like that, and then cover the other one. Excellent for clearing both sides. Really good stuff. And so those are some of my go-tos. Again, Nadi Shumna, also very effective. Slow breathing is good. And when we meditate, it's not breath work. It's really just calm breathing. And yeah, I've tried things like box breathing, and that's all good for, I think box breathing is really cool for working on concentration while you're listening to your heartbeat and breathing in a particular pattern. But yeah, my go-tos are Bastrika and rebirthing are my favorites.
And so your center, Aquarian Alchemy, how do people get involved with that?
They can just email me or send me a message and we can book a session. My Instagram is at Aquarian Alchemy LA and my website is aquarianalchemy.org. So you can email me to book a rebirthing session and we can talk about or a lucid dreaming session. But usually people come here and they want to learn the rebirthing stuff because it's valuable information. And the beauty is I can teach this to someone one time and then they'll know it forever and they can do it at home. And I always encourage people to do this on their own because I want people to be liberated. Selfishly, it's good for my karma when I help people liberate themselves. But really, you know, we all have it. It's the individual. I'm simply just passing some teachings that were brought to me, you know? So my ego's not that inflated with this stuff. It's really, I'm so grateful.
We lost Eric. All right, you're back.
Yep. Yeah. So just email me at aquarianalchemy.org. My email's on there. It's team@aquarianalchemy.org.
And do you have any current mentors or people of influence that you would recommend others look into?
So my teacher, Mahesh, his Instagram is 5 Elements Breathwork. And he's super cool. And he taught me to teach what he's teaching. So I can train people to facilitate 5 Elements Breathwork, rebirthing breathwork. But if you want to go work with him in India, highly recommend that. He's a great guy. Check him out, 5 Elements Breathwork on Instagram, DP Mahesh.
Cool, thank you for that. What about books?
So a book that I send everyone, if people are interested in this healing the birth trauma, if they're interested in immortal yogis, then you can read a book by Leonard Orr called Breaking the Death Habit, Science of Immortality. I sell this book at all the festivals. I give it out on PDF. If you write me on Telegram, I'll send it to you for free. But it's nice to have a hard copy of it. And this book is life-changing. I mean, it really describes yoga. He doesn't just talk about clearing the auric field with breath work, working with the fire and water, but he also talks about focusing the mind, good eating, and what enlightenment means. And he really gives a good good explanation on immortal yogis. And if that's something that you're interested in, and if you believe in extreme longevity, I would say this is a good place to start. So Breaking the Death Habit by Leonard Orr, check it out.
Sounds amazing. And what is the long-term vision for what you have? Give us one thing in your imagination that's happening.
So I want to I love that question. I want to be the facilitator. I want to be the conduit to teach rebirthing breathwork to more of a mainstream audience, because I feel like this hasn't really blown up. There are people teaching Leonard Orr stuff around the world, but he's not that big. A lot of people know rebirthing. Even more people know holotropic, but the name Leonard Orr is not a household name. And I think he is one of the most important spiritual teachers of our generation. So I'm here to bring his teachings out to the mainstream. I'm also an investor in a company called Cocoa Bear, and we're the first flash frozen coconut. So I also I'm a distributor of this coconut. We just got into Whole Foods and Air One, and because it's the first coconut, that's frozen. It's the most hydrating coconut and living coconut on the market. I want to help facilitate people's hydration as well. So breathing deep and hydrating, that's what I want to help people do. And I want people to dream as well. So I love bringing dream philosophies to the mainstream as well. And I also have sweaters that I sell on my website. So I want everybody wearing a Aquarian Alchemy sweater.
Hit them up. Hey, back to Cocoa Bear, because there's these little cute little polar bear shaped coconuts that I saw at Air One a little bit ago. And that's the Cocoa Bear company you're talking about. Are they in all Whole Foods, or is it just a West Coast thing?
Right now, well, we just got into Whole Foods about 2 weeks ago. So right now we're just in LA, I believe, in SoCal, and we're going to go national. So it's really exciting to be part of this project.
I was talking to Eric at Conscious Life Expo. I was telling him about my experience when I used to order young coconuts from Thailand, and they would come. First of all, they would be like $150 to $200 for like 12 of them, or it was insanely expensive. This was 15-ish years ago, and they would come in a box, and three of them would be broken and leaking, and they would kind of taste a little rotten. And I did it because there was nowhere to, because when I went to Whole Foods back in the day, they didn't sell organic coconuts. So I had to see if I could source my own organic coconuts. And what I found was that, like, okay, it's too difficult to get organic coconuts here, because this is what they're going to show up as. That's probably why they're not in stores. So what makes Cocoa Bear different, I'll let Eric explain, is it seems like a lot of that's been alleviated because
yeah.
of your guys' process.
Totally. We changed the coconut game. Like you said, usually when you get a coconut here in the States, by the time you get them, they're rotten, fermented, and moldy because they've just been refrigerated. They have a very short shelf life. They have a 2, maybe 3 week shelf life. Normally, if you try to freeze a coconut, they explode. Nobody could figure out how to freeze a coconut. But over at Cocoa Bear, we figured out how to freeze a coconut properly without them exploding. Now, when you freeze a coconut, it has a 2 year shelf life in a freezer. And as soon as it's thawed out and you put it in a fridge, it has a 30 day shelf life. So we freeze the coconuts 2 days after harvest, ship it around the world frozen. Whole Foods gets it, defrosts it, and sells it. So the fact that it's frozen and that there's no plastic changes the game. Every coconut comes with a bamboo straw, and every coconut has a soft spot at the top. We actually put a little X where the soft spot is. So you take the bamboo straw, stick it in the top, and you drink it. And we actually made it very easy to open. We put a light cut around the equator. So you can take the back of a knife, strike the coconut a few times, it cracks right open, and then you have the meat. So now hydrating has never been easier. So, you know, I can't wait for us to go national. But if you're in the Los Angeles area, go to Whole Foods or Air One and try Cocoa Bear. It's got a little bear face on it. They're super adorable. And it's literally the best product on the market, at least for hydrating.
It's funny because you took a product and you enhanced it. And no one's done that. So now you have a product that no one else has. And that's how you differentiate yourself.
Yeah.
Really cool.
The CEO of the company, the guy who created all this, one of my good buddies, he saw this as an untapped market. He said, nobody has frozen a coconut. And everybody told him, you can't freeze a coconut. So he said, well, then I'm going to freeze a coconut, because everybody told him he couldn't. So big props to our founders at Cocoa Bear.
Amazing. Well, Eric, if you could say one thing to the audience listening or watching today, what would that be?
Breathe deep.
Great. All right. That's your invitation, everybody. Thank you all for being here. Until next time, it is Ra of Earth and Eric Cassano. That's E-R-I-K-C-A-S-A-N-O on Instagram. I got that right, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Ra, thank you so much, Soul Brother. That was so fun. You're incredible. You're doing such great work. I love your content. I mean, you're just talking about all the stuff I'm into in such a great way. You know, I really love that video, how you explained how the pineal gland had crystals in it, just like a transistor radio. you know, proving spirituality from a scientific perspective, which is, but you're doing it so good. So thank you for the work that you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you for receiving. I've always looked up to you. So it's been an honor to have you on this show with me.
Thanks, brother.